on Judiciary, May 9, 1985, public hearing and possible work session in Subcommittee 1 for House Bill 2460. In work session, House Bills 2757, 2019, 2437, 2518, 2904, and Senate Bills 176, 226, 573, 426, and 418.
And essentially, what I would really seek to do through this bill would be to eliminate those philosophical difficulties in the future and simply tell us that we are indeed forced to face reality, and if we don't have the facilities, then we simply take what is there and come up with the best product that we can through the matrix. And that's essentially what we are addressing through this particular bill. I have indicated to individuals before, I don't view it as being a crucial piece of legislation. It's simply something I think would be appropriate to avoid difficulties in the future, but quite frankly, if there were any considerable difficulties involving the bill, it really would not change current practice in any event, at least so far as the majority view on the present commission.
Great. Thank you very much, Judge. Are there any questions? Hey, if not, we appreciate very much the fact you had an opportunity to appear before us today.
Simplest appearance I've ever made. Thank you.
Okay, let's return to our normal order of our agenda. We've got 2460 is the first bill up. Council, could you review briefly the testimony on that bill at further hearings and advise if there are any amendments for our consideration?
Yes, we had Julie McFarland from the Juvenile Rights Project appear and testify in favor of the bill, as well as Judge Nordblatt. And Pascal Phillips appeared, and several other people offered testimony as to the difficulty of getting, of having standing before the juvenile court where they've taken care of children. The Juvenile Rights Project and Pascal Phillips offered an amendment to the committee, which is, you should have in your bill file, it's dated 429, that both the Juvenile Rights Project and the Committee for Oregon Families have agreed to. As far as I know, I have not seen any other amendments to that particular amendment. The amendment takes care of some of the questions, constitutional questions, and also the public policy issues that were raised in the first bill. And so that is before you. And basically, the bill is very simple. It's just two sections, and the amendments are just two sections. And they look like this. They're attached to the Juvenile Rights Project materials.
Okay, and it's my understanding that these were prepared by Ms. McFarland, is that
That's
correct?
Right.
And have they been reviewed, or do they, has the requester, Committee for Oregon Families, signed off on those? Good. Pascal, why don't you come up and get on the record, if you would, please. I don't know if we have anyone else from the Juvenile Rights Project here today or not.
She was supposed to be, but she wasn't here yet.
It's my understanding Ms. McFarland had taken ill and was not going to be able to be here personally, but we were hoping that perhaps another person from her office might be available. But
right.
Pascal, if you could just let us know your position on the amendments and see if there are any questions.
I'm Pascal Phillips, Secretary of the Committee for Oregon Families. I'd like to say a word about the why that we want the changes. The bill was originally submitted to Legislative Council with an outline of what we wanted to have happen. This because American Bar Association at the time was too busy to write this bill for us. It came back in a surprising form that included a number of things we had not expected to be in the bill, some of which raised constitutional questions. At that point, Ms. McFarland, together with Mark Hardin of ABA, rewrote it in a form which conforms to that of many other states. That is the origin of this. So the Committee for Oregon Families and the Juvenile Rights Project, in fact, did not want the first version. It was sort of a misunderstanding, and we selected this second version after consulting with American Bar and national organizations.
Great.
This closely resembles the New Jersey statute, for example.
Counsel?
I don't really have a question for you, Pascal, other than if you would disagree with this, but at the last hearing, the committee discussed the issue of whether grandparents ought to be included. Do you have any objection to that?
We have no objection. It sounds fine to us.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
It's within the materials.
Yeah.
There you go.
Is this a substitution? So delete lines 4 through 17 and insert. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
You want more?
Let me just bring the members' attention. We do have a letter, I believe, copies addressed to us. We had asked Children's Services Division to provide us with a comment, which they titled Critique of the Amendments, and they've got written testimony. I believe Ms. Pearson is here, is that correct? Okay. Why don't we take just a moment, and maybe, Ms. Pearson, if you'd be good enough to join us at the witness table in case we have any questions. Pascal, you can remain there if you like.
Okay.
Just be sure to adjust the microphones to the person who's speaking so they're properly recorded in the public address system. We'll pick them up, we hope. Maybe we ought to ask Ms. Pearson to just summarize the content of the letter here and why apparently this amended version raises some concerns for you folks, if
All
it
right.
does.
It does raise some concerns for us. Of course, we do see some positive aspects, and we want to emphasize that. I do think that it would be helpful for courts to be able to consider persons other than parents. And now it's pretty much you have to prove a parent is not a fit person before they can give custody. The disadvantages that we see in the bill, and just that we would like to alert you to, is that first of all our counsel says that the bill would not apply to juvenile court matters. This is an amendment to ORS, 109 statutes, and so would affect the matters that of domestic relations, guardianship, adoption proceedings. The concerns that we have then, as it affects our clients and also just general children, is that there's no definition of emotional ties leading to a child-parent relationship. With the lack of definition, most anyone could make the claim that. And there needs to be some kind of a screening device for courts so that they aren't harassed by frivolous claims of persons having such a relationship. The original bill did have such a clause in there. I think it was 2 years, which seemed, that seems reasonable. If a child has lived with someone for a couple of years, I would think that the person could make a claim that they had established a parent-child relationship. That's our first concern. Another one is that we feel that there needs to be some guidance for courts in terms of taking a non-parent over a parent. There are many instances we see in our work where the young immature parent, for a variety of reasons, really hasn't had a chance to prove they could establish a tie with the child. They aren't bonded now, but they've never had the child in their custody. For instance, if they were hospitalized or imprisoned early in the child's life, of course, the other non-parent would be able to show they had a tie, and the legal parent would not be able to show they had one because they've never had an opportunity. That's of a concern to us. The other was just that I think among the list of things listed was placement and adoption. And we would request that those be stricken. The law already grants independent adoption petitions to be filed, so this seems like doubling there, and we would hope this would not apply when our agency or a private adoption agency has legal custody of a child and is considering placing a child somewhere. So, and we would also hope that it would not apply when we have legal custody under the juvenile court proceedings. So those are our main concerns. I think anyone who has been involved in long drawn out custody battles might have also additional opinions, and we were hoping the committee would invite testimony from judges, persons who've been involved in making custody studies and doing conciliation and mediation work.
Okay. Ms. Pearson, I think you were present at the first hearing also, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
I think one of the people speaking for the idea, and I had a follow-up note indicating continuing support, was Judge Norblatt, who we have generally recognized as an individual who has a fair amount of experience in this area, and he was generally supportive of the measure. That, I think, for me, is somewhat persuasive in terms of how the courts would be able to handle this language, and they, in addition to CSD, would have a significant, if not paramount, responsibility in actually interpreting this law. But let me take some questions and then pose it. I guess, before I do, recognize Representative Phillips, is there one option we're faced with today is obviously either taking action, or another option might be to allow you two folks to try to sit down and see if there's any way that your differences might be resolved through amendments. So I'd like you to consider that option, Pascal and Ms. Pearson, while we take questions. Representative Phillips?
Pascal, just so I understand the purpose, this is the way I think this bill would work, and please correct me if it's wrong. Say you had a custody case already decided and a single parent had custody, and for some reason that person with custody falls of ill health or dies or there's something happens. Then normally, as it would work now, custody may revert directly back to the other parent who didn't, for some reason, get custody as a result of a divorce or whatever reason, when in fact the child may not have seen that person for a year or 2 years, or when the person may not even want to see the child, where there would be a grandparent or other individuals that perhaps even a step parent, that has seen and lived with and knows that child, and then could petition the court so that they could get custody rather than have it revert back to somebody else who for some reason there's been a break in the relationship, but maybe the natural parent. Is that how?
Yes, that's how it would work. You may recall there were four different families came here at one sitting there who all described cases exactly like that. We brought one step-parent, one relative, one foster parent, that sort of thing.
I just want to make sure I had the mechanics down. That's how the mechanics go. Okay. That's all I think of now. Thank you.
Okay, are there any further questions? Pascal, I don't know if the sense of the committee is that we're prepared to move today. I, for one, feel we could, but if the parties feel that we're kind of at the late date in the session, and it's possible as an option, although I know we always feel a little uncomfortable suggesting this, that if we were to take favorable action today, at least to move it to full committee, you would have a few days possibly to sit down and chat and see if some mutually agreeable clarification might come closer to resolving some of the concerns that CSD has, at least to keep it moving. And or if it takes you longer time beyond the point at which we still have the bill, certainly I'd be glad to go with you over to the Senate side and join with you if you've reached a compromise over there. But I'm kind of reluctant to hold the bill up here in subcommittee any longer if there's a consensus here on the subcommittee to move. Pascal, if you want to respond.
Yes, I'm all for your suggestion of moving ahead. Frankly, the two-year part, we have no objection. I think it's a good idea, if you want to know the truth. The chief problem has been newborn children. Get a child 18 months old, they've been their whole life with someone. So we had trouble with the two-year thing. But you can't have everything. I think the 2 years would keep the courts uncluttered. That amendment would be simple. You would just take it out of the original and add it on to the amended version. Does not apply to juvenile.
Representative Phillips.
Before we get, I would agree that I'd like to move this bill today.
Okay.
I would be cautious, however, to amend it at this point before you have a chance to talk about it, Pascal, not necessarily with CSD, but with some of the other folks that have worked on the bill that may want to really talk about that two-year period. I've got some serious reservations as to whether we want to put 2 years into it. There are some responsibilities that have to fall on the court. We have to assume that they can make reasonable judgments. That's what they're there for. And I'd rather have, if I may, suggest to the committee that we could move this, let them get together with their own parties as well as with CSD, and if they come back and have agreed at that time, after 3 or 4 days of having a chance to reflect upon it, that two years is the way to go, then I might be more receptive than sitting it saying, oh yeah, we'll go along with it.
The reason I was a little bold about that one, but I wasn't going to be about the others, is because I know our inner workings, that was a hung jury. It was about half and half all the way down the line, whether we'd want the 2 years in or not.
Okay, well, I think Representative Phillips' suggestion makes a lot of sense at this point, and we do and could, if we take favorable action today, not schedule this till our Wednesday full committee next week, which would allow you the opportunity to consult with your principals and then see if some language is appropriate. And though we don't like to take further amendments at full committee, I think in this situation that'd be probably more appropriate rather than delay the bill any longer. So, Representative Phillips, I believe you were seeking recognition to move the amendments as amended with the addition of grandparents among those individuals who could assert standing to present this issue to the court.
That's correct. I'd like to move House Bill 2460 with amendments, including grandparents, to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Phillips moves House Bill 2460 in the amended form identified as the McFarland Amendments, which is part of the Juvenile Rights Project testimony, with the further addition of grandparents to the group of individuals granted standing under the amended version. Is there further discussion on the amendments? Any objection to the amendments? If not, they're adopted. Representative Phillips?
I'd like to move the amended version of House Bill 2460 to the full committee with two pass recommendations.
Thank you. Representative Phillips moves House Bill 2460 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Hill. Aye.
Pesky.
Aye.
Aye.
Phillips. Aye.
Strayer. Aye. Motion's adopted. Thank you. And again, if you can get together, and I'm sure there are probably some areas where you can reach some agreement on clarification, we'll be glad to see your work product at next Wednesday's full committee work session on this bill. Thank you, Ms. Pearson. Appreciate it. Calling Representative Bunn and Representative Van Leeuwen up to speak to the next subject. We do have a membership of five bills that came to this committee dealing generally with the topic of uninsured motorists and how it is we might try to refashion the sanctions or incentives and suspension procedures to try to deal with the problem of uninsured motorists. It's a problem for the Motor Vehicles Division, it's a problem for law enforcement, it's a problem for anybody who's out on the road and may have a tangle with someone who's uninsured. And unfortunately, we've had some suggestion that those ranks, unfortunately, are increasing. We have contacted all the prime sponsors on the several bills, and at an earlier work session, Representative Bunn, whose bill is has been designated as the vehicle for action, discussed a lot of the initial policy recommendations that were to be made, and I think that the subcommittee at that time had asked to be prepared in an engrossed version. And that version of the bill is now before us, and I'll ask council perhaps just to review those amendments for us as Representative Bunn and Representative Van Leeuwen come up to chat with us.
Well, let me advise the committee that I talked to Representative Bunner not very long ago, and he suggested that there may be another amendment to these amendments that he's going to introduce to the committee today. I must confess that the opportunity to review these amendments, I have not had an opportunity to review them because the bill was being hand engrossed and I didn't have them available to me. So I have not had a chance to read through them any more than you have, unfortunately, Mr. Chair. But I do know that the hand and gross version is exactly what Representative Bunn presented to the committee last time.
Have these been run through Legislative Council?
Yes. Is that who? Yeah. These have already been through Legislative Council. That's correct.
Okay. Why don't we stand at ease for a bit while Representative Bunn joins us? Tony, have you guys seen this hand and gross version?
I've got an extra copy.
Why don't we give one to you so you can be working your way through it to double check. It basically incorporates the amendments 2757-3 from 42385, and there may be some others as well. But if you could take a look at that and then be prepared to respond to questions or offer comments, we'd appreciate that. If there are any other interested parties who need copies of these amendments, let us know. I'd say, Bun, we have, we think, a hand and gross version of the amendments that you had suggested to us, and I think we're ready to take action today. Representative Van Leeuwen is going to be here also, is here to, I think, also discuss an issue related to this bill. But maybe just a brief overview of those amendments which have been engrossed into the bill, and we'll be ready to proceed.
Did you want me to do a brief overview?
If you could, please.
The bill as amended, again, has been reviewed by Motor Vehicles Division, and they indicate that it would work well with their system. The provisions in the amendments provide that when the random audit is done by the Motor Vehicles Division of drivers to find out whether they're insured, and if they are in fact not insured, then now they will become subject to the financial responsibility reporting laws, where before we gave them a free bite at the apple and said, run out and get insurance, come in and show us your proof of insurance, and then there's no penalty. So the audit had limited value. The amendments take care of that problem and make it a more stringent penalty. The amendments also create a Class B infraction instead of a Class C infraction for driving uninsured, so that there's a greater penalty involved. Additionally, there's a suspension for providing false information regarding insurance. And the statement, presently you give a statement when your motor vehicle is registered that you have insurance. There would be the additional requirement that you indicate that you'll keep the insurance. The original bill provided that the language that a judge may dismiss a case of driving uninsured when proof of insurance is provided is removed, but the judge still has that discretion under current law. In addition to these amendments, I would like to suggest one other amendment that I would hope would occur between now and full committee, if you could accept it conceptually. Representative Kopetsky had asked the question in the earlier hearing as to whether or not, if motor vehicles made a mistake or the insurance company made a mistake, with the driver being in good faith and thought they had insurance, whether in fact then they would lose their license. And I said that I felt motor vehicles could take care of that administratively. Motor vehicles has in fact indicated to me that there is a problem, that there does need to be a provision that provides for protection of the driver in that honest mistake situation. So I would ask that if the bill were passed today, that that amendment be accepted conceptually, that your legislative council draft the amendment and it be brought to the full committee with that amendment.
Okay.
And I'd be glad to have legislative council draft that amendment so the staff didn't have to do it.
Okay, let's see if were there any further questions from members as it relates to the bill has been amended or proposed amendments. Representative Phillips.
Representative Brown, we've discussed in the past the responsibility that a car owner who may be uninsured or under some suspension to have some liability to go with that car. As much as if I was a suspended driver and had a car and I knowingly let counsel drive it who was a suspended driver, is there any responsibility on me? This, I take it, does not address the vehicle and that arm's length responsibility, but just the driver.
This bill does not address that issue. There have been legislative proposals that would actually allow confiscation of the vehicle. Some of the lending institutions were concerned about that kind of issue. I felt in drafting and putting this bill in that we ought not to put that in here and create the additional controversy that issue might raise, because there's a balancing issue there between the good to the public of that confiscation versus the dangers to unknowing lenders and that sort of thing.
Thank you.
Okay, are there any further questions for Representative Bun? If not, thank you very much, Representative. Representative Van Leeuwen.
I only came up. Are we putting bills all together? Are we not? I don't have any amendments.
That's correct. And
I wanted to be notified so I could keep abreast of what was happening. And I would appreciate having a copy of the whatever packet is that you have there.
Okay, Representative, we'll be glad to provide you with a copy of those amendments. Our assistant has them. Counselor, if you could make those available. Representative, if you'd like a few moments or...